Podcast. On episode number 28, we'll be discussing R, the R programming language that's largely used for statistics these days. My name is Anthony Skopatz. I'll be your host and moderator on today's show. Joining me this week are three very insightful panelists. First up is Geraldine, a host and well-known patron of our podcast here. Hello, Geraldine.
Hello, Anthony. You're too kind.
Next, we have Chris Jordan Squire. Chris is a graduate student in the mathematics department at the University of Washington, worked with me last summer at NThought. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Anthony. Thanks for inviting me on.
And then finally, we have Philip Cohn. Philip is also a University of Washington graduate student, but in the biostatistics department, and his research interests are in statistical genomics. Hello, Philip.
Hi.
So today we're basically going to be doing our first R episode, and R is this big language. It's a huge ecosystem, has a lot to offer, and I am sadly not the I'm not the R expert on this show, so I'll be guiding the discussion more than really jumping in with expert knowledge here. So Chris, why don't I give it to you to sort of describe what R is and generally where it's useful and maybe where you've used it.
So R, generally speaking, is a DSL, domain-specific language, that is used most of all in the stats world for analyzing smallish data sets that can fit in memory. It basically is useful for more or less anything where you do statistics on the data set, but it's very much not a general-purpose programming language, and you feel that anytime you try to use it for anything other than just doing number crunching and making pretty pictures. Yeah, so I've used it a lot, both in my coursework here and for some of the consulting projects I've done around with professors and students at UW, University of Washington.
Philip, why don't I pose the same question to you and then to Geraldine afterwards?
Well, I think that's quite accurate, as in what Chris just said. It is very much a domain-specific language, but the wonderful thing about R is that it's been adapted to so many different branches of statistics. Oftentimes, you'll find that the people who publish papers in the big stats journals are also the same people who write the software packages in R. You basically have very rapid turnaround times, and you know that the code is probably good. So R is really very convenient for running the analyses on relatively small data sets, and if you already have some kind of analysis that you're aiming for, it'll probably be there somewhere. So that, and I think most stat students, at least in undergrad, are taught R to begin with, so we just stick with it.
Geraldine?
Yeah, well, that seems like a very accurate description. I mean, I'm hardly an expert. I haven't used it that much, though I'm ramping up the use recently. I would emphasize that it is absolutely heinous to use it for any kind of programming or scripting like you would do in a language like Python. And if you try to do that in R, it's just... I've made the mistake of trying to do that, and I've had cause to regret it. But it's true that if you're trying to just, if you're manipulating your data, you just want to play around with some data frames, and I want to look what it looks like if I plot it this way, plot it that way, take a subset. It is disconcertingly easy to do that kind of thing, like on the fly. So it's really, if you're testing out analyses on the fly, it's absolutely wonderful.
So my question to you three, since you all are in agreement on this, and it sort of took me aback, is this domain-specific language thing? You really feel that it's a DSL. So when I think of R, I think of it, you know, sort of on par with a language like IDL. I don't know if anyone's had experience with it.
I've had the unfortunate, yes, I've used it. I regret every minute of it.
Well, that's like many IDL users, which maybe I shouldn't be saying as a member of the Flash Center. Now that I'm surrounded by astrophysicists, I feel like calling R or IDL a domain-specific language is actually, you know, maybe kind of a slight to the language as a whole, right? I mean, it gives you this interpreted environment. Sure, it doesn't interface nicely with everything that you might want it to, like C or Python or Ruby or JavaScript or one of these other languages. It is largely used in a domain. I'll grant you that.
So for example, I hadn't ever tried to do collection stuff in R, like with more general collections than just having your array of data. But this was something Philip had stumbled on a few weeks ago or a few months ago and told me. R doesn't really have any notion of collections. And in fact, if you want to do a hash table in R, the hack that you use is that there's a notion of environments, and the environment is ours, you know, your bindings of variables to things. You can use a hack where you treat environments as hash tables. When you have to do a dreadful hack like that for something so basic, that strikes me as a sign that you're really not dealing with something meant for general programming.
And I should note that this hack for a hash table is somewhat obscure. There is such a thing as a hash table library in R. Someone didn't know.
Okay.
Well, I was trying to, just this very morning, I was trying to do a very simple for loop, and I just couldn't figure out how to do a stupid old for loop, because it already has all these things built in to iterate over rows or columns of data frames or whatever, but just a very simple for loop, if you're not using like the built-in methods to do that kind of thing, it's very frustrating, because I feel like you have less flexibility. You have more power if you're trying to do something that's like standardized for the data frame or whatever. But if you're trying to do a very simple, flexible thing, it's a horror. Or maybe I just missed something really, really obvious, which wouldn't be unexpected.
R is surprisingly well adapted to its environment, though. So a lot of people do their analyses on just workstations, right? But sometimes if you want to run some complicated analysis that usually would take a long time on just one machine, they have a package called SnowNow that allows you to distribute the work across several workstations. So long as you use the apply functions that the Snow package comes with, the parallelization is more or less free. So there are some pretty handy features.
Yes, but it's another sign that something of a domain-specific language, if the solution to this is taking too long, isn't let's write it at a lower level, but instead let's buy a cluster and run on the cluster.
No, I said workstation. You can create a makeshift cluster with a bunch of old computers that are just lying around.
And who hasn't done that before?
Well, I think they've made it a lot easier to do that. Instead of, you know, just logging in and opening an instance of R on every machine, you can sort of have it managed from one computer that tells the others what to do. But it's an interesting idea, and I think it's only recently come to my attention. So
has anyone here tried to like write a for loop in Bash recently?
Yes.
I mean, yeah, you can, right? Flow control in Bash is fully supported. You can even like pass around functions and stuff. But you know, like I don't think of Bash as being domain specific. Equally, or conceptually simple flow control is very difficult in Bash, right? And that seems to be what the case is here. Or is it actually impossible to write a for loop without using their built-in iterated methods on the data frame?
You know, I think you can. Well, it's just the documentation is kind of annoying.
Yeah, and there's I was trolling on the forums and so on, and what I found was somebody had basically written a package called, I think it's called for each or something like that. So if for a simple question like a for loop, somebody went and wrote a package. Like, isn't that something that should be one of the basic capabilities of the language as opposed to an add-on package? Or is that just incredibly naive of me?
I think that R can typically loop over
an array.
Sure.
Yeah, it can loop over.
Yeah, but it doesn't have like a for thing where you can say
you
for this in this.
In an array. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, which is what I was frustrated about, because it seems like it exists in a more complex structure, but you would want to have access to the very basic function.
I don't think the R has an equivalent of Python's X range, where you can loop over a range where you don't generate the entire array. And so that is pretty, I've never seen that. I think every time I've written a for loop in R, I've had to, you know, for I in some array. And if it was a giant for loop, then I needed a giant array to represent that.
So why don't we maybe like move on to, rather than bashing on some of the low-level things, what are people's favorite aspects of R?
Pretty pictures.
Pretty pictures?
Covariance matrices. I can get covariance matrices in R faster than anything else I've used.
For me, it's really just convenience. You don't have to write very many lines of code in R to get a half-decent to get the answer that you want out of it. Turning it into a paper is harder, but it's really very good for doing statistical analyses. Very fast, very easy to think about it.
Very fast depends on.
Oh, sure. I don't
it's
mean
very fast. Fast,
it's fast to write.
Time.
It's easy to write. That's a really big plus.
I guess my favorite part of R is actually that it's written in C or C++, right? And so there is this nice, the times that I have used it, that lower level API was available to me. And I mean, it wasn't particularly well documented either, but it was relatively simple to go in there and figure out how to set up one of these environments and then start feeding it code as I needed to. Geraldine, did you want to elaborate on your pretty picture love over here?
Yes, absolutely. I've just recently discovered this ggplot package. Only recently discovered because I only recently started this new job, so ggplot is all the rage. No, it's wonderful. It allows you to plot things, and it's incredibly powerful, and it's pretty intuitive. I mean, there's a bit of a learning curve because it's the way the docs explain, and there's a book that goes with it, a free ebook. Its concept is that it's a grammar, and you use elements of grammar to build your plot. Yeah, build it and modify it. And it's once you get past the learning curve of getting this grammar thing, you can do some incredibly cool plotting really, really fast. And it's very, very easy to add all sorts of refinements to your plots.
So it uses operator overloading or some such to make it so it's the grammar works? Is it something like that?
I have no idea how it works, to be completely honest. You construct your plot, you gradually, like line by line, you first like specify your data set, and then you say, well, you know, I want to plot these aspects of the data with points or with bars or histogram or whatever. And it uses like geoms, which are like a basic geometric element. You build it up by adding these successive elements, and there's modifiers for the aesthetics, the way the different elements interact. It's fairly powerful.
So what does it add to R's existing graphical capabilities? Does it just make things a lot easier, or does it allow you to create a wider range of graphs? Or
you have to code a lot less yourself because there's all these different elements. Like, really, it's a grammar. There's all sorts of pre-engineered aesthetics and things that you can use but modify very quickly, where you don't have to write a lot of boilerplate code to set out how your axes are going to look like or how they're scaled or how everything relates to each other. I'm sorry, I'm not doing a very good job explaining.
What you're saying reminded me of, in the stack stuff that I've done, they sometimes emphasize that pretty pictures are good, but there are also a good number of professors who are very sure that pictures are meant to deceive, and so they don't necessarily care about a picture, but they really want to see a big table of your estimates and confidence intervals. The similar thing that I ran into for one course I was taking where I was using R a lot, it wasn't as much an issue as my consulting was, but I wanted to generate these tables. There's this one R package that would automatically create LaTeX code for, I have a data array with all my data, and then it would create all the boilerplate LaTeX code to put a table in the paper.
You're talking about the Xtable library,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Xtable. By and large, in the stat and biostat departments here, we don't seem to use graphics terribly much. It's more making a table of our parameter estimates.
Well, it depends on who you talk to. I think it's just in the world of clinical trials, it so happens that when you publish something, the editors don't want to see many pictures and they want to see lots of tables. It may be a cultural thing.
I think it's that way in a lot of political science things too. They want to see big tables.
Yes, I'm not sure if pictures are necessarily deceptive. They certainly can be. It's rather difficult to digest so much information out of a table. So,
yeah, because sometimes you have a big table, but you can't see how things are clustered necessarily. Or like I have the data I was working on today, we have two data sets. One is generated with one sequencing technology, one with another, and we're looking at the quality of the sequence that is generated. We're looking at certain metrics, and there's so many numbers you need to look at that if you just put it all in a big table, it's impossible to digest that. But if you plot it, you can do some very simple plotting things that don't have to be deceptive, because you can be very clear about what's plotted against what and how the transformations are made. And it shows you, like, the human eye, the brain will understand clusters of points and things like that in a way that just reading numbers out of the table will never pop out. It also depends who your audience is and what you're trying to communicate with you, with your either your table or your picture. But sometimes the only way to really communicate to people who are not absolute specialists, or let's say your managers, if that's the environment you're working on. I now have managers who are not necessarily scientists, and you need to be able to communicate concise information in a way that is understandable without looking at big tables of numbers.
So I think now that you say that, I think one of the other formats where the big tables came in was for some of the clinical trials type papers that I was looking through. There would be a standard thing of breaking down the population you were using the trial on, you know, by what their characteristics were. And part of the reason for that was just you wanted to be able to see that there weren't any drastic biases in your sample. And so if there's a standard format, then if your table is following some standard format, then that can make it a lot easier to read the table just over, you know, from experience.
That, and oftentimes in the tables of parameter estimates and standard errors that we provide, we're not looking at more than at most 24 variables. So it's not so critical, I guess. True, if you only have 24 numbers and perhaps a few intervals to look at.
Yeah, whereas when you have thousands or possibly millions of data points, you need to summarize them in a way that's... and it, sometimes that's already the summary of bigger data sets. That's where a graph really will communicate much more efficiently, I think.
Those are all pretty interesting points, much more on the stats side. I guess I would personally agree with Chris in that, like, most of my work ends up needing to, like, output to tables, and having something that just outputs to LaTeX is, you know, an enormous time saver, personally. Does anyone here sort of know about the history of R and where it comes out of, and sort of what niche it fills in the scientific computing ecosystem?
Philip might be able to correct me on this, or Geraldine, I'm not sure, but I believe that R came out of S+, where R is the, you know, the free open source version of S+, which was I think S became S+, which was written ages ago, something like 20 odd years ago, maybe. And I believe it was made mostly by statisticians for statisticians. And if you look at the base library, the base R library that's been kept around, you can also tell they were not exactly native programmers just by looking at, like, they have five or six different versions of apply. The way that they do dynamic dispatch ever for their objects uses a dot so that it looks sort of like what you might use for Java with methods or C++ with methods. But on the flip side, you can also just use a dot as a separator, the way you'd use an underscore in other languages. And I know for actual programmers, using the dot that way throws them off tremendously. They actually get kind of angry the first time they see it.
And if you look at the documentation for R, a lot of the documentation for the base packages often mention this is put here for compatibility purposes with S. So indeed, R is really very much derived from S, and it's inherent. And I'm sure it's inherited a lot of problems as well.
Yeah, it fortunately isn't as bad as something like MATLAB, say, in terms of it's not crippled by its legacy stuff. You can actually have more than one function in a file. Dealing with closures is nice and simple and doesn't drive you crazy. It seems to be very much a history of a very closed community.
So on that closure note, actually, it seems like S is related to / inspired by Scheme, right, which is a functional language. So I think even at the very outset, you'd have a lot of, if you're based on some like functional language like Scheme or Lisp or something, then closures are going to be something that you have very early on, right? Or they're going to be in the S programming language specification. So there's sort of no avoiding that, actually. This is just what Wikipedia is telling me, and I'm inferring. So I knew it was based on S, but I didn't really have a good sense of where S came out of or sort of how it's functionally different from other languages out there. Geraldine, do you want to talk a little bit about the niche that it fills in your world or in your life right now?
Right. In my life. It's actually an important part of my life right now. So the primary analysis that I do on genomic data is through this a Java-based toolkit that my team actually develops, the Genome Analysis Toolkit, or GATK. And most of the tools in that toolkit tend to spit out tables of data, which are called GATK reports. A large amount of my time now is taken, because the jobs run on the server farm, sometimes quite a while, depending on the scale of the analysis, but I get these data tables that load into R, and I spend a lot of time tinkering about in RStudio, which is, by the way, we can talk about GUIs for R. I don't know if you guys use some kind of GUI, but RStudio is really, really wonderful for that. And it's basically massaging the data, finding the interesting things to plot. I have some specific goals, so I need to get some specific information about, out of those data tables. And a lot of time is spent just plotting different parts of the data against each other to find that out, and playing with ggplot to plot that into pretty pictures.
Do you ever have the occasion to use Bioconductor?
Oh, I used that a while ago. In 2005, I did some microarray work. Yeah, that was a headache. I don't know. I remember hearing about Bioconductor at the time. I never really got into it, so I have not used it seriously. I've looked.
What is Bioconductor for the audience at large?
Do you want to take that, Philip?
I only know the outline, that it's a really big R package for dealing with genomic data. And it has this nice advantage, I think, of being able to deal with large data sets in R. It was made to get around that problem.
I see. You know how that worked?
No, I haven't looked into it because I really don't use it on a daily basis.
Oh, okay.
But Geraldine, yeah. If you know anything more.
Not really, because I haven't really used it. I've heard of it, but in my previous work as a postdoc, I used mostly BioPython because I had much smaller data sets, so performance wasn't an issue. And BioPython, I thought it was just much nicer to use because I like Python better, because I think it, for actual, well, scripting, I think it's a lot more flexible, and I like white space, and white space is important. Whereas R drives me crazy with the parentheses and the everything. It's just a complete mess, in my opinion. But then I don't like Perl either, so.
Oh, right. Coming from the Python world, ggplot seems a lot simpler than dealing with matplotlib, which isn't to cite matplotlib. It's just that matplotlib wants you to tell you exactly what you want, and ggplot just wants you to tell you, oh, you want something.
Yeah, I've used matplotlib quite a bit, actually, but I have to say that I like ggplot better. So I like the flexibility of Python, and now BioPython is getting very well fleshed out, and you can do a lot. But for what I'm doing now, it's because it's mostly like the hardcore analysis gets done in the Java-based toolkit, and the R part is really just playing around with tables of data. It's just easier to do in R because you can play with it on the fly and do things that is just harder to do with Python. So it's really a very specific use for me, playing around with tables and making pictures out of them.
I think that brings up a couple of good points, actually, in that R has actually been very influential in other languages, maybe less, I shudder to say it, domain-specific ones, perhaps. And portions of R are going to these other languages, and there's a lot of communication back and forth. Does anyone want to speak to that in terms of what they know about other packages or other languages like R?
I know Wes McKinney's doing really good work getting pandas to have more of a data frame type feel up and running in Python. So I haven't looked at pandas for the last few months. So for all I know, Wes has completely rewritten it two times since then. The way that he's constructed it and what he's constructed for is very, very geared towards time series data for economics and finance, which makes it matter a lot more about performance than, say, a normal statistician or biostatistician might care about. And he also is making it a lot more geared towards, like, mapping and reducing type things. There's a certain name for what exactly it is that I'm forgetting, but it's what Hadley Wickham's Plier package in R does. And Plier's another thing which seems to be used a lot outside of statistics and biostatistics, and not terribly much inside of it.
So pandas is an interesting project in general. Are there there are things in other languages, I'm sure. But then there's also other commercial options that are available too, right? Not just S. There's things like SAS and STATA.
SAS has existed since the dawn of time, though, and I think they're trying to incorporate more R stuff because they see users fleeing to R.
That's not entirely fair. So you can't flee SAS if you have a giant data set.
Yes, that's the thing. They, like we said, R doesn't deal well with out-of-memory things, and so if you have a giant out-of-memory data set and you still have statisticians who don't really want to be coding all that much and they'd rather be actually doing statistics, then if you happen to have a giant boatload of cash, SAS seems to be a popular option.
Data, however, is more convenient than R for a lot of analyses. The syntax is just a lot simpler. And there are a lot of convenience functions built into Stata that will help you form your data set correctly. So if you need a certain transformation of your data set from, say, if you have repeated observations on an individual and it's in a wide format, you can very quickly transform that into a long format instead with just a line or two of Stata code. It's just geared towards convenience. You don't have to think in Stata. It's amazing.
But that hasn't... So that's not something where R is influenced at all. It's more that...
No. It's...
one day it might hopefully influence R to not be so god-awfully ugly with the syntax.
Any other comments on this, on sort of other places in scientific computing that and how R compares?
Like I already said, it's nicer to work with than MATLAB, but that's saying about as little as I can, other than it's nicer to work in than Fortran as well.
And I'm not sure how influential R has been outside of its own domain, as in the languages which are typically used for the analyses of data sets.
Yeah, I don't...
I don't think that it's been terribly influential.
Yeah, well, I don't... So I know... So there's the D3 library in JavaScript, which is for data visualization. I haven't used it, but I keep really wanting to, but it's...
D3 is really nice.
But that's for interactive data visualization, the sort of stuff that... I don't know if it was inspired or got anything from R. I know that D3 evolved from something else, but it makes really pretty things if you want to put it on a website and let people play with the data themselves in a non-programmatic way.
It's a pity that you can't publish interactive graphics.
Yeah, you just have to ship the browser and everything else, right? Along with the paper.
But a lot of academic work, they're starting to move towards, you know, they have the short little 8-page paper in the journal, and then they have the supplementary materials online. And so if they happen to have, say, a dedicated and cheap grad student to publish, you know, a nice interactive thing to convince people the research is doing exactly what it's saying, without making people look through the code, I'm sure that they would eventually do that.
Okay, I think that just about wraps it up for our discussion this week. And we're going to segue now into our weekly rant section. Here we'll give about maybe 30 seconds each to rant out on whatever topic you want. Geraldine, it's your soapbox.
Well, then I'm going to rant about Massachusetts drivers. I'm sorry, it has nothing to do with computing, but it has to do with commuting. I've been doing a pretty long commute every day, and it's just, and people here, you may know their little nickname, Massachusetts drivers, are called massholes.
Yeah.
And for very good reason. It's just crazy. People are insane. And not only are they crazy reckless sometimes, but sometimes they're just crazy slow. And as soon as there's 3 drops of rain, you have to go 50 on the highway. I don't know. It's crazy. So that's my rant, is that I wish I could just get rid of the other drivers on the road when I'm commuting. Thank you.
All right, Chris.
Oh, so I've been using MATLAB a lot for the past several months as I've been working on research, and it's been driving me crazy. I've been wishing and wishing that I could use Python, but I have to use a certain advanced quasi-Newton optimization solver, and it has to be really robust to the stuff to the function that I'm optimizing doing stupid things. And I wish I could be using Python. But unfortunately, all the really good Python solvers are there for optimization are they don't quite do what I want. And so what I'm going to rant about is I want better optimization libraries than Python. And I would love it if it was in SciPy Base. Like sure. All grad students, I don't quite have enough time to write the stuff myself. And so my ranting is that there aren't enough researchers putting stuff into Python, because it's pretty, but for some reason, people don't believe that they should be using the pretty general purpose programming language.
Plus one to that. Philip, you're up next.
Oh, I wish I had something to rant about. My week's actually going really well.
Rant about not enough biostat people using C. You can rant about that.
I'm not sure about that. C's not all that nice a programming language.
Well, then tell them about the speed-ups that you got finally wrote in C.
There was a 55... I rewrote something that I originally wrote in Python in C, and it sped things up by a factor of 55. But I had to learn C.
that's neither here nor there, I guess. You're a better person because of it. My
an interesting assertion.
Well, C's one of those things everyone has to put in their time, like once you get to a certain level. I think my rant for this week is about reproducibility. At the Flash Center, I've been working on sort of a workflow management tool for our code, and it is surprisingly easy once you have that tool to build just complete reproducibility on top of that. And it's staggering that more people in science don't do that.
Cool is this?
So it's called Flash, or it's a workflow management tool for Flash. And so what I mean by reproducibility here is more than just saving version numbers of the code, but also saving exactly what command was run and the state of the source code at that time. But that's all the scientific computing insight that we have time for today. You can learn more about this stuff at either contact me personally, or you can find us at insight.org, INSCIGHT.org, and on Twitter or GitHub, or you can email us at info@insight.org. The Insight Podcast is a co-production of softwarecarpentry.org, Kitware Incorporated, and the HyperVenue. Thanks for listening.